Hey teachers, this episode is sponsored by Spaces Digital Portfolios. Spaces makes student growth in your classroom come to life with their free visual portfolio tool. Teachers can create spaces for their entire classroom, student groups, or for individual students, all online and completely free. Celebrate student learning and give parents a window into your classroom. Try Spaces at www.spacesedu.com today.
Is this the teacher hotline?
Hello, teachers. Happy summer, everybody. Welcome back to the Teacher Hotline. My name is Ronald Hay, where we try to answer some of the most pressing questions for teachers in and outside of the classroom. Today, our question comes from Natasha from the Lambton Kent District School Board. Natasha, what can we do for you?
Hey, Ron. I'm currently considering getting my principal's qualifications because I envision myself being in a school leadership position one day. I love the classroom, but I want to make a wider impact on a whole school community. And with the last year and a half and seeing COVID wreak havoc on schools, it's made me really nervous about handling the pressures of leading a school. I want to know, what were some of the challenges principals dealt with behind the scenes this year? And why did they decide to leave the classroom to take on a school leadership position? Thanks.
Thank you so much, Natasha. You are absolutely right. Teachers have definitely been in the front pages during COVID, but we need to show a little bit of love to all our school principals for leading their schools and community through this pandemic. So today I brought in none other, Dr. Katrina Sampson, head of school here at Appleby College, but soon to be the new principal of Havergal College, an all-girls independent school in Toronto. Katrina's been at Appleby for 18 years. And during her time at the school, she served as an English teacher. But besides her incredible work in the classroom, Katrina's legacy will be mainly known for her outstanding leadership at the school. She's held multiple leadership positions, including the upper school director, assistant head of school for student life, and she spent the last 11 years guiding this ship we call Appleby College as our head of school. Oh, and no big deal, on the side during all of this, she somehow managed to get her PhD at the University of Toronto in Educational Leadership and Administration. And she's also a mother to four children, a dog, and wife to my boss, Brendan Sampson. Katrina, welcome to the show. Did I miss anything there?
No, thank you, Ron. That's quite quite the introduction. It's always a little awkward listening to your bio, but thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me on.
No problem. Just wanted to make sure you're not the mayor of a city or something that we don't know about as well. So congratulations on your new appointment as the new incoming principal at Havergal College. This is a big milestone and a new chapter in your life. How do you feel about when that news broke out?
Well, you know what? I will say that all in all, it just felt like the right time. And as I've been reflecting these last few weeks and heading into this transition, lots of things hard to say goodbye to. Appleby has been my home. I did a ton of growing up here. I met my spouse here, raised our kids here on campus, but probably most importantly, you know, just really developed as a teacher, as an educator, developed my vision for schools and school leadership. So there's lots of mixed emotions right now, but I can say the opportunity to lead at Havergal. It's a great school. I'm really excited about being in a new environment and new challenges, meeting new people. And I'm, of course, most excited to work with the faculty and the students there.
Yeah. So like you said, you've been at the school for so long, so many major milestones for your life. Like you said, you met your spouse here, you raised children here. So it couldn't have been an easy decision. So the first question, I'm sure you got asked 100 times already, is why now? Why do you think the change was perfect in this moment in your life?
It's a great question. And, you know, I think that I sort of live by this motto, or at least I try to live by this motto. And it was an executive, a female executive, CEO, I think, of IBM, who has this great quote, and it says, growth and comfort cannot coexist. And so I think it's just, I hit that stage where it's time to get a little bit uncomfortable, right? You know, there's something about schools that make them, they're new every September, right? New students, new faculty, the start of a new year. So it never gets tiring. It never gets old. And every time I think, okay, that's the wildest thing I've ever seen, I'm guaranteed that 2 weeks later, something else will happen. So it's certainly not, it certainly was not for, you know, boredom or not being challenged, because that's, I think, impossible, especially at a school like Appleby. But it just felt like, it felt like the right time for a move and a new personal challenge for myself. And like I said, you know, I think it's going to instigate a whole new level of growth in me as a person, as an educator, a partner, a mother probably as well. So the stars sort of aligned, and it felt like it was the right opportunity. The school, their vision and what, you know, the board is hoping for, the community, all of those things just felt like the right fit.
You mentioned challenges, and you're absolutely right. There are no shortage of challenges when it comes to working at a school, let alone leading a school. And I'm sure you did not anticipate COVID, just like any other school leaders out there here in Ontario and over Canada. I'm sure that put a big wrinkle into some of your plans and some of the things that you had envisioned for Appleby. So let's talk about COVID and some of the challenges that you faced with your team with operating the school this year. And as our caller mentioned, you know, it can be quite intimidating for especially new teachers or new leaders trying to lead a school, because this is something that nothing in the world could prepare you for. So I think we'd all like to just take a peek behind the curtain, because I think we've been giving so much props to teachers, but we forget about the administrators that are leading this ship. So can you give us a little bit of insight into some of these major decisions or tough things that you've had to dealt with your team behind the scenes that perhaps students and teachers and parents don't get a chance to see?
Yeah, you know, we did pandemic planning as part of our risk mitigation exercises. We had a pandemic plan. A lot of that was born out of the SARS experience here in Ontario. But I think the biggest challenge with COVID is and has been just the unpredictable nature and the swing of in-person and back and in-person and back. And because, of course, the science continues to evolve and our understanding continues to evolve, that means that, you know, our protocols, our risk mitigation strategies, all of that piece also continues to evolve. I think the thing that has perhaps been the most interesting when I look back on what our pandemic plan was, heading into, before we kind of knew about COVID, but kind of coming out of SARS and heading into to this period, is that we were fairly confident as a school that we would be able to transition to a remote online experience with relative ease. And I think we've done that. And I think education across the board has been super successful with that. But what we probably didn't prepare for, or what we hadn't anticipated, was the emotional, physical, mental toll that being remote would take on all of us, on employees at the school, certainly on parents, on students. And that's actually, I think, probably been the most significant challenge, is just wrestling with that on and off piece. You know, when we went into our kind of first lockdown last spring, the well-being team at the school, our school directors who oversee kind of each of the grades, and they act very much like kind of vice principals do in the public system. You know, we all sat down together and thought about, okay, who are our most vulnerable students in this scenario, right? And who do we need to have eyes out on? Who might be struggling? Who was struggling before COVID? What are we going to do to make sure that this move to remote is going to be as successful, and, you know, who has eyes on those particular students? The challenge is that unpredictable nature of how that element of isolation and how that kind of fully remote experience was going to impact. Sure, we had some of those students, but we didn't have all of them, because there are some kids who were, you know, doing fantastic in our traditional model of schooling, and who you wouldn't have never suspected that it would have been a really, really big challenge. And I'll say the same for our faculty and staff as well, right? I think in a community like Appleby, we know each other well. We have a good sense of, you know, everybody's, you know, relative amounts of their personal lives and, you know, is anybody living alone and, you know, who might we need to connect with? But we don't necessarily know, you know, who are our extroverts, who are our introverts, who, you know, who's really going to be missing that, you know, kind of face-to-face social connection that fuels them and energizes them. You know, in teaching, we bring our whole selves to work. It is highly personal and you just, you pour your soul into what it is that you do because it's such a relationship-based piece. And if you're struggling, right, as an individual, that impacts the relationships that you have with students in the classroom. It impacts the energy level you bring to work. So I think it's really, that's been that unpredictable nature of how COVID was going to impact people. That's probably been the toughest piece to navigate. Some of the logistic pieces around, you know, physical distancing and how much space do we have and ordering masks and cohorting students. And those are tough and those were stressful because of how quickly we had to shift to some of those pieces over the course of last summer. But those things are manageable, right? Like there's a tactical solution to those pieces. There's not necessarily a clear-cut solution to someone struggling with a sense of isolation or struggling with their mental health, particularly because we didn't know when it was going to end. And we still don't know when it's going to end, right? And so leading through that, that's probably been a lot trickier.
Now, the school's done such a great job with checking in on students and faculty members with students, right? We got a therapist at the school to support students. From an HR perspective, we have mental health benefits that teachers can use. But the one thing that we always forget is the people that are asking how people are doing never get checked up on. So how have you been handling all of this last year and a bit?
Well, thank you for asking. That's very nice of you to ask. You know, I probably like most people, I have, you know, ups and downs and days where, you know, the perks of working from home, so to speak, are great and you recognize them and you're kind of living them. And then days where it, you know, you really do feel like you're making sacrifices right across the board and you're not doing anything 100%. And for me personally, that's probably been the most challenging component. I think that for people who are either in a position of caring for, you know, dependent family members, whether they be children or whether they be an elderly parent or, you know, another member of a family who haven't been able to access some of those outside resources, who've been there and are balancing that load at home as well as working, I think that's probably been the toughest part, is just, you don't feel like you're giving 100% anywhere. And, you know, we work, as you're well aware, we work at a place and where we like to be on our game at all times, right? And we like to strive for excellence and be doing our best. And that, so I think that's been tough. But at the same time, I constantly remind myself, you know, I'm in a profession and I'm at a school with great resources, and I'm in a profession that's still operating, right? I'm not operating a small business or a restaurant or, you know, a nail salon or, you know, or something that that can't run in this environment. So hugely, hugely lucky. And I think when I'm having those moments of being wildly overwhelmed, I just think about what the potential alternative would be. So it's very kind of you to ask, but I've been trying to reframe and keep positive and really kind of ground myself in that sense of gratitude.
That's incredible to hear. And you know what? You're right. It has been so tough this last year and a bit. And sometimes it's hard to be grateful for the things that you have because things are just so gloom. But when you think about it, you're right. There's so many other people that are suffering out there, like some of the businesses that haven't been able to operate for the last year and a bit. And we've been so fortunate that we still get to come to a job and still get paid and get benefits and whatnot. And these are things that a lot of people don't get during these times. And we have been very, very lucky. So it's always incredible to hear to other people ground themselves in to remind ourselves that we're very fortunate. So is there anything during COVID that perhaps kept you up at night?
Yeah, there's lots. I like how you use the past tense. That's very positive. It kept you up at night. I think there are still some things. The first and foremost has actually been, the student and staff well-being, right? Because again, you in this environment, a lot of those clues that we pick up on in the classroom or on the sports field or, you know, in the art studio with kids and, you know, that we pick up with staff members, right, with colleagues, a lot of those cues are visual, physical cues, right, that we see in terms of how somebody's doing, right? Like, oh, you know, it's, you know, odd, I haven't seen so-and-so in a while, or, you know, that student's been eating lunch every time I've seen them, they've been eating lunch by themselves, or, they've been absent so much and that, you know, you don't have that kind of very tangible way of almost that kind of third sense of being able to pick up what else is going on. And so knowing that that's looming out there, right, that it's so easy to click the screen off, that it's so easy to just kind of not show up and not be able to hear someone's voice and see how they engage. That has probably been the piece, is just wondering, okay, is everybody okay? And are we really missing somebody that, you know, that we don't have eyes on because we don't have the same structures here? The other piece that I would say is because we have a boarding population here at the school, it's high risk in a lot of areas, but particularly obviously when it comes to COVID, you know, we're living in these kind of congregate settings, especially with the variants in terms of how quickly that that could spread. And particularly because the majority of the students who are here with us right now on campus are really long distance students. And so I think about, you know, them, you know, when I'm sick, I like to be taken care of when I'm sick and I'm not feeling well, right? Like I think back to, you know, having a parent there or having somebody who will, you know, bring you water and a Tylenol. And I think about, you know, those kids in that scenario. So the boarding piece also played a lot on my mind as, you know, how are those kids in particular doing? How are our boarding staff doing, right? Because they hold this huge responsibility for the students in their care while they're also in the middle of managing this pandemic and the sense of isolation. And so I would say, you know, that idea of kind of mental health and how people were doing was something that just your brain could spin and spin and spin and spin because there is no answer. And, you know, you have to be settled with the fact that you hope that all of our eyes and ears are open and attuned to that. And then the boarding piece, right? Just, you know, we've all watched, you know, a regular flu season rip through one of the boarding houses. And so the idea that this highly transmissible, pretty scary illness could do the same. So, I mean, kudos to the whole residential life team and our health center because, wow, they manage it. And the kids in boarding, right? Like they really stepped up and respected the rules. So, but yeah, those would be two things that kept that kept me awake, still keep me awake.
Let's switch gears for a little bit and let's talk about you and going into leadership positions and administration, because there's a lot of teachers out there that are perhaps thinking of transitioning into this role, but are perhaps unsure that this is a role for them. So from doing my research about you, it looks like, correct me if I'm wrong, you kind of went into administration about 2 years into the job. Am I correct? When you first got the upper school director role?
Yes, you are correct. It was, a bit of an unusual path, I think.
Yeah.
So was that wasn't unusual? The speed.
Was that always the plan, or was it kind of more of the right opportunity at the right time there? And why did you decide to go into administration so young into your career?
That's great question. I do think educational leadership was always in my my sight lines, and thinking about some of the questions that that folks have asked around wanting to have, you know, an influence at a different, you know, at a different level, was something that I thought I always wanted, you know, I always wanted to do. I'm interested in the intricacies of schools and leadership and how we can do things, you know, better, more creative. I really, that's something that always, that has always attracted me ever since I thought about going into education in the first place. The way that it happened at Applebee is, it's a combination of things, I think. I mean, I would like to think that I did, you know, my first couple of years here, I did work hard and I was, you know, interested and eager, but I certainly wasn't thinking of this role that I'm in now currently when, you know, I put up my hand, for some roles. But the way that that actually happened for me was that it was actually at the end of my first year and the school opened up the assistant director of the upper school. And it was a colleague. It was a colleague of mine in the English department. I was teaching 5 classes, all of grade 9 and 10. I had upper school advisors. I coached under 16 girls volleyball. I'm sorry to that team. you know, he came across the hall and he said, "You should do this." And I said, "What?" And he goes, "You should do this. You're with the upper school students all the time." And, you know, for your listeners, upper school is grade 9 and 10. And I thought, I've only been here for like 10 months. What are you talking about? He's like, no. He's like, this is totally up your alley. You should do this. You seem to like this age group. Like, go for it. And so I did. And then it turned out that the person who was in the upper school director role, a great colleague of ours who's still here, ended up going on parental leave. And so that position opened up. So I will say it was a lot of that role because there's a lot of discipline in that role. There's a lot of, but some great program opportunities too. It was baptism by fire, as they say, though, for sure. But I had some really fantastic colleagues. And I think the one thing that I think is really relevant is that this probably wouldn't have happened in a lot of other schools. I was very young, very new to teaching. And the principal at the time, Mr. Guy McLean, he was never particularly caught up on tenure or right. He looked at things like competencies. And he's like, are they willing to work hard? Do they, you know, hold, I think, values that align with us as a school? And, you know, are they willing to listen and seek out advice and ask for help when they need it? And so that was something that I think he, I guess he saw in me, or maybe nobody else will buy, who knows, but, and so things kind of went from there. And, as much as some of those positions are really hard because you're dealing with student discipline and, sometimes not really happy cases or, happy people involved in those, but I liked the problem solving of it, right? I liked spending time getting to know the kids and taking a perspective, which I learned over time, but taking a perspective as what's really at the root of what's gone on here, right? What's really at the root of this? Because, you know, generally, you know, students that are here, they, you know, they want to do well. And, you know, sometimes that's not always reflected by their actions. But so that was the step. So it was something that was in the back of my head. An opportunity came up, but a colleague was the one who pushed. And so the one thing I will say is that we need to champion one another, right? We need to sometimes remind people that not to get stuck in the right time or the exact right opportunity, or I don't have all of the things that tick the boxes, because that's what this colleague did for me. And it, you know, it's hard to say whether I would be in the role that I'm in now without that initial push, but and it was something that I let that was fun to do.
Applebee is a really unique place for those listeners out there that don't know about this. At Applebee, a lot of our leadership team are still actually required to be in the classroom. So Katrina, correct me if I'm wrong, you're still teaching one class of English, correct? I don't know if this year changed because of the pandemic or not.
But. Yes. So I do. Yes, I do usually still teach one class. I didn't this year because of the way that the scheduling worked out second semester. But no, I do. And that's actually something that I've fought to keep. But I think I can speak for the rest of the colleagues on the leadership team, is that there is it's the reason we all went into education in the first place, right, is the connection with the students. And, you know, when we were back in our previous schedule, you know, those 3 hours a week that I was in the classroom and just got to, you know, close the door and talk about literature and hear what the students had to think about Gatsby or Hamlet or, you know, whatever it was that we were reading at a particular time, talk about writing and the impact, like it's just so fueling. It's so fueling. And principals certainly in the public system have so much on their plate. Like they've got so much to do, and they're dealing with school populations that are, you know, some cases like 1400 students. And it certainly doesn't necessarily work in the elementary sector, but I think that there would be probably a larger pool of people looking to go into educational leadership if they know they didn't have to fully leave the classroom.
Well, you kind of beat me to my next question there, Katrina, which was, do you think that a model like this that we have here at Appleby would perhaps work in the public sector or perhaps other independent school systems?
Yeah, I think in other independent school systems, for sure, there's lots of flexibility, I think, with the right eye line to kind of, you know, to what's possible, for sure. In the public school sector, I can't really, you know, aside from my own experience as a student, you know, I can't speak to everything that's on their plate. I'm sure that the notion of being, you know, in a class a day in a semestered model is probably wildly overwhelming, just with, you know, all of the kind of daily fires and things that people are putting out. And they don't, certainly my perspective also is that, you know, in the public system, principals don't have quite the volume of support in other leadership roles within their schools, right? You know, I've got a ton of support, but just a phenomenal team of leaders. And then we've got a number of leadership opportunities that really give people the time and the ability to dig in and advance a particular project or portfolio or program. So that's really helpful. But I do think one of the things that I do hear from teachers and teacher candidates right across the board is not wanting to leave that connection with the kids. And because that's the part that fuels you.
I want to now just wrap up with just talking about your time here at Appleby. Time is ticking, Katrina. You got about a month left at the school, and I'm sure you're very aware of that. So looking back at your time at Appleby, let's talk about just some of your favorite memories. What were some of the things that really stick out, whether it's inside the classroom or just outside the classroom?
Oh, there's so many. And I have been, you know, kind of in the evenings, 2 o'clock in the morning when I can't sleep, this sort of thing has been playing in my head. The first year that I was teaching, I had, like I said, I had these, I think three classes of grade 9 and two of grade 10. And it might've been when the student was in grade 9, it might've been when the student was in grade 10, I can't remember, but I remember I was teaching in the library classroom in one of the fishbowl classrooms. And it was end of the day and I'd gone across the street before class to get a thing of Freezies for the kids. I went across the street to the Dew, which is a little convenience store across the street. And I got these thing of jumbo Freezies. And I remember this kid who was just a fantastic human. His name was Nick Natchew. And Nick was on one side of the Harkness table, these round Harkness tables. And I popped the Freezies out and he actually jumped up and dove like belly across the table, surfed the table to grab one of the Freezies. As he does that, my boss, Mr. McLean, walks by the classroom window. And I was like, Matthew, I'm going to get fired today. Like, he's looking in going, what kind of chaos is happening in that room? I think to all of the, I think to some of the incredible service opportunities I've had, some of the travel opportunities with the school and just getting to learn about different places in the world. I ran my first marathon with Rob McGinnis, who's an assistant head of school here, and Claire Kelly, who is an incoming head of school for Round Square as a fundraiser for Round Square. So went to Greece for a weekend with some parents and some students and some students from other Round Square schools, and ran a marathon, which was a pretty incredible experience. You know, being up north at our northern campus, watching the students, some really in their element, and some students who aren't in their element at school and really in their element up north, which is just so fantastic to see. I remember walking across outside of the, it was an upper two, a grade 10 trip, and walking across the frozen lake one night because it dipped down too cold and kind of too humid too wet in some ways to stay outside overnight. I had this one girl, Lindsay, who was from Bermuda. And here Lindsay is like, what am I doing walking across a frozen lake in the middle of the night. Why did I come to this school? And I remember just chanting behind her. I'm like, there's hot chocolate inside. There's hot chocolate inside. Like, another 40 minutes. You can do it. And I remember talking with her afterwards about, you know, she was like, that hot chocolate got me across the lake. yeah. And just, you know, really like, and lovely moments of watching, you know, watching students, you know, be vulnerable, watching them grow, having, you know, getting them, seeing such great success, working with parents, right? I've got just some lovely, lovely memories of parents. Again, going back to those kind of early years, I remember being teaching those two grade 10 classes again. And I had these two Jeffs who both last names started with B. And I had these two Jeffs, one in one section and my other in another section. And one was a snowboarder. Both were snowboarders, actually. And one was a bit chatty and distracted in his class. And the other one was pretty on the ball. And I was doing parent-teacher conferences. And one of the Jeff's parents came in. And I was saying, you know, he gets a little distracted with so-and-so, but he's doing pretty well. Da, 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 da. Anyway, the other Jeff came into class and said, Miss, I think you got me confused with the other Jeff. And I'd realized that I'd spent the entire 20 minutes of our conference talking about the other Jeff. So I had to call them and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so embarrassing, how unprofessional. And they were so kind and they were so lovely. And I still, you know, have a connection with those parents today. So, you know, it's, you know, from being in the classroom, right? It's the students, right? It's the whole reason we're here. Our incredible colleagues, right? I don't know if you have this feeling, but I often have this feeling, especially if I'm sitting around a table or doing planning with other grade 12 English teachers. They're just amazing. Like, they are amazing. And there's no time to rest, because you can't rest on your laurels. This is not a place, because you've got a colleague who's got some crazy creative idea and is doing something or spending all this time. And sometimes you're like, oh, I just wish you would just be maybe mediocre for 2 seconds and let me catch my breath. But they push you, right? And I can say with, you know, absolute certainty that, you know, I wouldn't have progressed like I did as a teacher without, you know, without spending time with these just incredibly, incredibly driven, passionate, caring people, and having these kids who just, you know, they're so respectful. Even if they hate your discipline, they respect the passion and the energy and the commitment that the teachers bring. So there's tons of memories. I'm sure I'm going to be, you know, back here in reunions 25 years from now, sitting in a chair somewhere.
Too many memories.
Yammering about memories.
Too many memories to talk about. Well, you're going to start some brand new memories at Havergal College. So for the people and the students and the community over there that don't know you yet, how would you describe Katrina Sampson? What are they getting with you coming into their school?
Ooh, I got to be careful and make sure I sell myself appropriately. I think they are, Havergal is getting, you know, the thing that I care most about is the kids that we have in our care at any given time, right? And so when I make a decision as a leader, that's at the root of every decision I make is, how is this going to impact the experience for the kids at the school at that given time? And I obviously care very much about the alum, and they help inform experience, and of course care about the students who will come up and will follow them. But the responsibility that we have at any given day when we walk in the school are the kids who are there with us right then and there. The second piece that I really see in my role as a leader is I need to do whatever I can to support teachers and work in their magic with the kids, right? Take all of, you know, take the obstacles that I can, the blockades, anything that prevents them from being able to do what they were put on the planet to do, right? And if that is, you know, in your case, right, foster a love of accounting. Who knew, Ron? Who knew that
I still don't know.
that could be inspired, but it is, right? You know, just to build that connection. And so I care very deeply about being able to set up the structures and the systems, think about what's happening in the school so that teachers are able to do what it is that they do best, which is connect with those kids and inspire, you know, help them to see things in themselves that they, you know, they may not have seen when they stepped into the classroom.
What lasting words do you have for the Applebee community as you are riding into the sunset for the people that you've worked with over the last 18 years that may or may not still be here, but the people that have crossed paths with you at some point in time? What do you have to say to everyone that's listening?
Well, it's been a ride, that's for sure. I say this to my kids a lot, but you know, I think a life motto is work hard, be kind, and have fun. And Applebee and all of the people have allowed me to do that, I hope. And you know, we're super blessed to be able to do what we do each day. I really believe that. And I believe that I'm, you know, been in a school with teachers who genuinely believe that, who come and are sort of in awe, like, this is awesome. I can't believe I get paid to do what I do every single day. And that has been, you know, the absolute joy of my career, is to be surrounded by people who hold that same belief, that same awe and wonder in the job that, you know, really has chosen us, I think, or the career that has chosen us. It's a vocation. And I'm so, so grateful. I'm so grateful because it has really been all my pleasure to be here. And I've been the beneficiary of their intelligence and their passion and their drive and their energy. So I'm excited to see where the school goes. I'll be watching from a distance. But it's going to continue to do great things because it's a school built on great people.
Well said, Katrina. Thank you so much. And you've been an inspiration to so many of us here at Applebee. And we appreciate all the incredible work that you've done behind the curtains to make sure that teachers and students can come to work safely. And this school year turned out to be a huge success. And it's all in part to you and your team and your leadership. And we're definitely going to be sad to see you go. But Havergal is definitely going to be super lucky to get a person like you to come through their doors.
Oh, thank you so much, Ron. And thanks for having me. I loved the opportunity to talk and reflect a little bit. Got me, yes, a little wisty-eyed here.
I will say, Katrina, that things do feel a lot better when the shoe's on the other foot. Like, I remember coming to interview with you for the very first time, and I was so nervous. And now it feels a lot better to ask the questions this time around. So.
Yeah. That's good to hear. You survived, though.
Well, Katrina, thank you again so much. Hopefully we can have you back on in the future. We wish you the best of luck. And thank you so much to all our listeners for tuning in today on today's episode of The Teacher Hotline. If you enjoy this episode, feel free to follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. And of course, you can follow us on Spotify, Apple, and of course, any other streaming services. Don't forget to leave a review and a rating. And we'll see you guys next week. Take care.